those creatures.
Those creatures know what that means, what anything means. Wait a minute, something's happening.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to circumstances beyond our control, we are unable to continue the broadcast.
Now here's another bulletin from Washington, D.C.
Martial law prevails throughout. Ladies and gentlemen, I have a grave announcement to make.
So that we may confront this destructive adversary.
Everything wiped out. May be the last broadcast. We'll stay here to the end.
People of Earth, do not attempt to interfere with your radio communication device, for we have assumed total authority. We control your base, and we control your travel. You will relinquish control of your radio device to Mystery Playhouse.
Ah, there you are. I've been waiting for you. I'm Dr. Morgan, your host for the next hour in the Mystery Playhouse. Tonight, we're going to hear an episode of suspense entitled The House in Cypress Canyon. But first, a story about those creepy, crawly things called worms. You know the kind I mean. Except these worms are a little different. So sit back and join me for our first story, Lights Out and the Revolt of the Worms.
And now, Lights Out. Arch Oblers Plays. Stories of the Unusual.
Now, this is Arch Obler. If you like terror and excitement mixed with a pinch of idea content, listen to The Revolt of the Worms.
And now we begin Arch Obler's play of terror, Revolt of the Worms.
All I can do is sit and think and wait. Wait for the floors to lift and the walls to crash and... No. Facts. Think of facts. Yes, a journal of facts. Think how it began. Why it's happening. Journal of facts until the walls crash in and the thick flesh. Charles Prentice, there's a fact. Chemist and fool. Fool.
Run away, run away, run away, run away.
Run away from reality. Run away.
You mean we're going to live in this godforsaken place, Charles?
Yes, Claire, I remember. You did say that. And I said...
Of course we're going to live here. It's ideal for my work.
But we're so far away from everything.
So far away from what? Your friends? My friends?
All right, Charles. Whatever you say, Charles.
You never disagreed with me, did you, Claire?
Why, it's so quiet up here. It's almost as if we were out of this world.
Yes, I remember. Young Jackson, you did say that.
I like working with you, sir. Why, up here, it's almost as if we were out of this world.
Out of the world. I wanted to be out of the world.
Hide from whom? Self, 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 self.
What are you going all the way up there for, Prentice?
To do my work, of course.
Propagating new varieties of roses, you?
I'll do what I please. I'll do what I please.
But, Prentice, to leave suddenly like this, it doesn't make sense. Roses are fine, but a scientist of your ability, in my opinion...
I'm not interested in your opinions. I'll do what I please. You hear me? Do what I please.
Do what I please.
Yes, sir. Everything's ready, sir. Greenhouse all ready for you, sir.
1 week ago, Wednesday.
Does the wind always blow up here, Charles?
Huh?
I said the wind. Does it always blow like that?
Why?
Sort of frightening.
Might be less frightening than the things that are happening back in the city.
I suppose so.
I know so. Where's that boy? Jackson. Jackson.
Yes, sir?
The phosphates, are they ready yet?
Not quite, sir.
Well, get them ready. Every one of the plants. We work late tonight. Very late.
Work late and hard. That was the answer to everything. Roses. Yes, develop the greatest rose in the world. That would be my answer to them. While they planned to bomb and burn, I'd develop the largest rose the world had ever known. And when the world settled down again, I'd come back and bring the rose to them.
My plan. Why did it go wrong? Claire! Why did it go wrong? Claire! No. Dead. You're dead. They killed you.
Dead as I'll be dead.
If I could only think, why did it go wrong?
Well, I put the solution that's left over, Mr. Prentice.
Yes, I do remember. That was it.
Gosh, Mr. Prentice, I'm trying to understand, but I'm so tired.
You must keep working. The only salvation is to work.
What's salvation got to do with roses?
Don't be impertinent. Do your work.
Yes, sir.
2 cc for each plant, and careful, don't let any of it touch the stem.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You weren't very happy, were you, Jackson? The things you couldn't understand.
It isn't that I don't want to work, Mr. Prentice. It's just that I'm all mixed up. These roses, why do I have to pour this stuff on them every hour on the hour? It doesn't make sense. Hormones? Sure, I know what they are. Sure, I know what they're for. Make us grow and everything. I get it. That's what you try to do with the roses. Make them grow fast and big. But how do you know these hormones will work on plants, Mr. Prentice?
Questions, everlasting questions. But now I ask them. Why did it go wrong?
Thursday.
What do I remember?
Where will I throw the hormone mixture that's left over, Mr. Prentice? Mr. Prentice, I said, where will I throw the hormone solution that's left...
Go away. Can't you see I'm working?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yes, I remember.
Friday.
What of Friday?
Friday night. Claire?
Yes?
Is that you?
Yes, Charles.
What are you doing walking in the dark?
Oh, it's a lovely night.
Romantic, at your age.
I just like the night.
You women, come back to the house.
All right.
Crazy walking around in the dark. What's the matter with you? Can't you walk? If I hadn't caught you, you would...
It's slippery.
What are you talking about?
It's all slippery around here.
Don't talk foolishness.
But it is.
Well, George, you're right.
Well, what...
Stand still. I'll light a match. I had some. Yes, now we'll see what...
Charles!
Stop grabbing.
What?
Worms.
Worms.
Well, can't you see? Just ordinary earthworms. Night crawlers. We just walked over a few of them.
Oh,
you women with your fears and your squeamishness. Walked on a few worms and you make more noise and more fuss.
Yes, I remember. Friday night.
The extra hormone solution. Where will I throw it, Mr. Prentice? Mr. Prentice, where will I throw the
Saturday.
Extra hormone?
Saturday. And then the night.
Jackson! Jackson, where are you? Jackson, I told you to stay in the house. Where are you? It's time to feed the greenhouse plants. Jackson!
He's not here, Charles.
What? Claire, you startled me walking up behind me.
Oh, I didn't mean to.
That infernal boy, where is he? Have you seen him?
Well, he's not in the house.
But I told him not to go out. I told him only an hour ago he's got to work all night. The plants must be watered every hour on the hour.
Well, he went out.
Well, why didn't you stop him? Now I have to go chase after it. Jackson! Jackson, are you out there? Come in!
Charles, what...
Well, what did you think it was? Thunder, starting to rain. Shut the door. Shut the door, I say.
But the boy...
If he hasn't the sense to come in out of the rain, it's just too bad. I've got enough with worrying about my roses without worrying about him. And don't you go out after him. He'll come back.
Saturday night, and when it was day again.
Charles, wake up. Please wake up.
What?
Where?
You're on the couch. You fell asleep on the couch. Charles, get up right away.
Well, what's the matter with you? Why should I get up? What difference does it make?
Listen to me, please. The boy, he isn't back yet.
What?
Jackson, he isn't back yet. Charles, where can he be? The storm, you slept. I waited.
Wait a minute. Have you looked in his room?
I just came from there. Charles, where could he have gone to? All through the storm.
Oh, stop talking so much. Let me get up and go and see. Why didn't you wake me up? Why did you let me sleep?
Well, I kept waiting by the window. I must have fallen asleep, too. I opened my eyes. It was day. Oh, Charles.
Oh, stop it. Crazy young fool. So we spent the night outside. So what's the difference? Teach him a lesson. Well, no wonder he isn't back yet. Fog like this. It's as bad as night.
Charles, I'm...
All right. What am I supposed to do? Go wandering through the fog like a bloodhound, like a fool? Don't worry. He'll be back.
You never came back, did you, Jackson? When the sun came out and that everlasting wind came and lifted the fog...
Charles, come here.
Where are you?
Back in the house. Charles, come quickly.
What is it? What do you want now? The boy isn't around. I've looked everywhere. Now what do you
want? Charles, what's happened back here?
What?
Well, look at the ground.
What in the... Who plowed this ground up?
Plowed?
Yes, certainly plowed. Can't you see? Some crazy, drunken fool plowed up the ground.
But during the night, Charles, how could that be?
You believe what you see, don't you? It's that boy.
What do you...
Yes, that Jackson. Went crazy. Found a plow, tore up the ground, and ran away. Went out of his mind. That's it. The boy's gone crazy.
Then that night, that same night, I went back to my work. Sunday night.
Charles, can I speak to you? Charles, please stop your work and talk to me.
Haven't you lived with me enough years to know I don't like being interrupted when I'm working?
But I'm frightened.
Are you, really?
Charles, stop it.
Are you out of your mind?
Yes, maybe I am.
What did you say?
Maybe I am crazy. All right, that's the only way I could have lived with you all these years.
What?
Endured your selfishness. Your unbelievable selfishness. Everything's for you.
For me?
For 20 years, everything for you. Your work, your pleasures, and what you think, what you want. Everything for you. Nothing for anyone else.
Will you shut up?
The gentle little Mr. Prentice. The scientist. The good husband who never lifts his voice.
I am a scientist.
Mother in heaven, I'd rather be married to a fool with a heart in him than you. You haven't got a heart. You never had a heart. You've got a piece of ice inside of you with your ego frozen in it. It's you, and no one else. And that boy can be dead out there, and you don't care. And I can be dead, and you don't care. As long as you're safe and doing what you want to do.
Will you go away and let me go on with my work?
Charles, I'm frightened. That boy... And then another noises.
I'm asking you for the last time to go away and let me do my work.
Listen to me. You've been out here all night, but I've been in the back of the house alone, and I've been listening. I didn't want to come out here, but I had to. Charles, all the things I just said, I meant them. For years I've meant them. All right, that doesn't matter, but I tell you this. There's something outside the house. Find out what it is, Charles.
20 years ago, I thought you were an irrational woman. I thought I'd trained you out of that irrationality. I was wrong. I'll humor you just this once. Where are these noises?
At the back of the house.
The lantern. Hand it to me.
Yes.
Thank you. You're frightened. You don't have to go with me.
I want to know.
What? That you're a suddenly loquacious fool? Well, so what am I supposed to hear? There's nothing. Hello out there. Hello. Well, what now?
Listen. To that. Listen.
To what?
I thought I...
You heard the wind whistling through the cracks in your brain. Come in my house.
Charles, wait.
Wait for...
You hear?
Yes. So what? Give me the lantern. If it's that boy...
It could be him, couldn't
that
it?
That crazy young fool playing practical jokes. If I get around the corner of the house and find him up to...
What's
going on here?
Charles, something moving under the ground.
Yes. So dark. Can't quite make out.
Charles, what is it?
I don't know. Animal of some sort?
Take me back to the house.
Go yourself. Moon will come out of clouds. See what this is.
Oh, give me the lantern, Charles.
No, I want to see. The house is back there. Turn around and go back to it. Go ahead.
All right.
Something burrowing. If an old moon come out, let's see. There, coming out. Now I'll see what holes. Holes in the ground. All over. What are they? Who? Bomb craters? But that isn't possible. No. Animal burrows. But what animal could make a hole 4 feet across? What animal...
Claire!
Where are you? Claire! So dark, can't see you. Claire, where are you?
Yes, Claire. I ran through the night looking for you. The echo of my voice is still in my ears. Looking for you.
Claire, where are you?
And the moon was under the clouds.
Claire, where are you?
And I couldn't see.
Claire, where are you?
And I couldn't find you.
Claire, where are you?
And then I did. You had fallen into one of those craters. Into one of those holes in the ground. I couldn't see you, but I could hear you. But which one of the holes? They were all over. Ground pockmarked with them. I ran around in the dark. I could hear you, but couldn't find you. And then the moon. It was out again. Blast the moon. Why did it come out? If it hadn't come out, I wouldn't have seen. And my head... Stop it. Stop it, Claire. I can still hear you. I can still see you.
Your body down in that hole. And as I ran toward you, suddenly I saw that something else was coming toward you. Something that glistened wet in the moonlight. Something long and slimy. A great twisting snake. Yet not a snake. Not a snake.
And the fear in me made me fall to the ground. And I saw as I lay there, I saw the thing move toward the hole in the ground as if you weren't there. As if it were blind and couldn't see.
Yes, like a great blind worm. It was a worm. A worm 10, 20, no, 30 feet long, crawling in fright to its home in the ground. And it moved toward you, covered you, crushed you.
You're dead, Claire. You've been dead for 2 days. Why should I tear out of my memory all the horror of how you died, of how young Jackson must have died?
Well, I threw the extra hormone solution, Mr. Prentice.
Yes, that's very funny, isn't it, Jackson? I ran away, and I was going to bring back to the world the greatest rose.
But I brought back the greatest worms. The hormones you threw away, soaked into the ground and into them.
Hundreds of little worms burrowing under the ground, soaking into their flesh, into their life process, miraculously accelerating the growth of them until overnight they grew and grew without limit into those terrible horrors.
And they're still growing. I could hear them
for the last 2 days, squirming around the house and over it. Great, monstrous pieces of slimy flesh squirming and writhing. Hundreds of them, thousands of them, burrowing under the ground and at night coming out of the ground.
I have seen them. A sea of flesh. A sea of worms. Yes, I hear you out there. You worms. You were under the ground, and now there's no room underground for you, so you've come out of the ground. The world was yours first, so now you're going to take it back again. The world. For the worms.
You're under the house. You're lifting it. The walls.
will fall and crush me, and I'll be dead. And I want to be dead.
Yes, no, I know why this is happening to me. I thought I could run away from the world and what's happening in the world.
You hear that, you worms out there? I thought I could run away.
I'm very tired. Just sit here and wait. Wait for them. I know how I'll die. The walls falling. Crushing.
Who? Window. Something behind me.
Oh. A worm at the window. Head lifting. He's falling in. And another following. And another. There's filling room all around me. The worms. The worms. Around me. Covering me. Cold flesh. Wet flesh. The worms. The worms. The worms. The worms. The worms.
This is Arch Obler again. Thanks to Edgar Barrier, Barbara Luddy, and Olin Soule. The sound was by Bud Tollefson, music by Joe Lay, and the engineer was Dave Diller, with Byron Kane announcer. Now, I want to talk to you about our next play. It's about a gentleman who may be slightly familiar to you, who gets himself dropped into the ocean in a hollow steel ball, and then this very familiar fellow gets himself dropped into the ocean among the giant crabs and the playful octopi of the deep sea. And when our adventure gets to the bottom, but that's going to have to wait until our next play.
Arch Obler's Plays. Stories of the unusual. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Are you still there? Good. I have to admit, that one even had me squirming a bit. But let us turn now to an entirely different can of worms with our second half of tonight's show. So don't go away. We've all moved at one time or another, haven't we? But have you ever stopped to consider who or what lived there before? After all, real estate agents rarely advertise a house's disadvantages. Like a certain locked door with no key. Need I say more? It's suspense, and the house in Cyprus, Captain.
Yes, Roma wines taste better because only Roma selects from the world's greatest wine reserves for your pleasure. And now, Roma Wines, R-O-M-A, Roma Wines, present Suspense. Tonight, Roma Wines bring you Robert Taylor in The House in Cypress Canyon, a suspense play produced, edited, and directed for Roma Wines by William Spear. Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills, is presented for your enjoyment by Roma Wines. That's R-O-M-A, Roma Wines. Those better-tasting California wines enjoyed by more Americans than any other wine. For friendly entertaining, for delightful dining. Yes, right now, a glassful would be very pleasant, as Roma Wines bring you Robert Taylor, star of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's Undercurrent, in a remarkable tale of suspense.
Merry Christmas, Jerry. How's the real estate business?
Kind of early with your greeting, aren't you, Sam?
Well, I got to get them in sometime. I may not see you again until next Christmas.
This real estate racket gets any crazy, I'll be dead by next Christmas. I'm glad you could get up here, though, Sam.
What's on your mind, Jerry?
You'll probably shoot me when you hear it, Sam, because I'm probably nuts. But doggone it, you're a detective and you're my pal, and I just had to tell somebody.
Well, you sound like it's serious.
That's just it. I don't know what it is, Sam, but... Now, listen, you know we're agents for a group of houses up in Cypress Canyon.
Mm-hmm.
Those places that were started before the war never got finished.
Oh, yeah.
All they got in were the foundations, just mm-hmm. concrete and a couple of beams. Well, they've been finished now. In fact, I'm putting up the for rent on the last of them today.
What do you want? Police protection from the mob?
Listen, Sam, this house that I'm talking about, it's got a number now of 2256. But before, when the men went back to work on it about 3 months ago, well, they just started when the foreman on the job brought me a shoebox that he'd found up on a beam. And this box had a manuscript in it, a story, kind of, all written out.
Yeah.
Well, he gave me the thing. I read it. I didn't think much about it. I put it in my desk. But the other day, when I happened to drive by there, I saw the number on the house and what the house looked like. I thought of this manuscript. Well, I don't like it. That's all. There's something funny about it.
What's funny about it?
Well, mind you, this thing was found in an unfinished house in Cypress Canyon. House that was only just started building.
All right.
Well... Listen, Sam, I want to read it to you if you got the time, and you'll see what I mean.
All right, shoot.
Well, here's how it begins. To whom it may concern, my reasons for setting down on paper what follows here will be abundantly clear.
What follows here will be abundantly clear to anyone into whose possession it may fall. First, let me say that I'm a very ordinary person. My name is James A. Woods. I'm 35 years old. By profession, a chemical engineer. My wife, Ellen, was a school teacher when I met and married her in Indiana 7 years ago. There's nothing in the past life of either one of us to suggest remotely any cause or reason for the dreadful thing that has invaded our lives. Our married life has been in no way different from that of millions of other average, reasonably happy, and congenial families. 3 months ago, I was ordered by my firm to take charge of a rather minor project in Los Angeles, Hollywood to be exact. The order was a sudden one. There'd been no time to secure accommodations, and conditions being what they are, the inevitable result was that until day before yesterday, we'd been living in the cramped quarters of one of those characteristic California motels. Needless to say, most of our spare time had been devoted to a search for something more permanent and comfortable, but the fruits of these efforts had been, financially and in every other way, a geometrical progression of discouragement. Until last Saturday afternoon, only 4 days before Christmas, we were driving into town on our way to a movie when Ellen saw it.
Jim, look.
What?
That sign in front of that real estate office.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
Don't you see what it says? For rent, furnished, two-bedroom house, close-in, immediate occupancy.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Aren't you going to stop?
Oh, Ellen, you know a sign like that. It'd mean right out in plain sight in front of a real estate office.
Oh, yeah, but Jim.
You know, they want $600 a month.
We'll never know until we ask.
If it's any good at all, there are probably 50 people fighting for it right back there now.
Well, honey, there's no harm in trying, now, is there?
You really want to go back?
Oh, it's probably foolish, but what can we lose?
Okay.
Oh, darling, come on, cheer up. How do you know? Maybe our luck's changed. Maybe fate's going to give us a nice new house for a Christmas present.
Sorry to bother you, but we just happened to see that for rent sign outside.
Oh, and, yeah, I hung it outside just this minute.
Is the house available?
Why, sure it is.
Let me introduce myself. My name is James A. Woods, and this is my wife, Ellen.
How do you do? Wow, looks like it's fixing to rain.
Yes, so it does, doesn't it? One of those things. The real estate agent had just been authorized to rent the place by mail that morning, and he'd hardly had time to look at it himself and put up his sign when we drove up. It was just an ordinary little California house about halfway up Cypress Canyon, number 2256. Just an ordinary, undistinguished little house. The agent didn't know much about it. Construction on it had been stopped by the war, and it had just been completed and furnished lately. Been vacant while somebody's estate was being settled, and now it is owned by a bank in Sacramento. Of course, we didn't care about it.
Got this key in the mail along with the authorization to rent. Only one there is. Of course, you can have duplicates, mate. Yeah, seems to stick a little. Oh, no, there it is.
Doesn't sound as though that door had ever been opened.
Well, a little oil on the hinges will fix that, all right.
Oh, sure.
Now here's your living room. Furniture's a little dusty, of course. You got to expect that. It's good furniture, though, you see? Benson Brothers.
Yes, uh-huh.
Now, over here's a little den. Paneled, you see? Radio, fireplace. Really a very attractive little room, particularly for a man.
Uh-huh, yep.
Now, the bedroom's off the living room here. Everything's all on one floor, you understand?
Uh-huh.
It's quite nice, I think.
Yes, uh-huh.
You can see you get the morning sun here. There's a view of the canyon through these front windows. We got cross ventilation.
That's about all there was to it. It wasn't the best place in the world. It was small and badly built, but what would you have done? We took it with as little inspection as that. It was the Saturday before Christmas. And the very same evening, we were struggling up the steps from the road with suitcases and boxes and armloads of clothes and all the endless bric-a-brac that people collect and never know they have until they move. Ellen began unpacking, and I began moving things around and taking the worst of the pictures off the wall, doing all the little things that everybody does when they move into a new place and try to give it something of their own personality.
Don't be such a sourpuss. You know, it's a roof over our heads for Christmas. That's more than we ever thought we'd get, isn't it? Now, what in the world are we going to do with those two pictures?
Why don't we just leave them where they are?
Jim, we can't. They're too awful.
Well, all right, put them in the closet then.
I can't. Both the closets are jammed full.
No, I mean the other one in the little alcove off the den. At least there's a door there. I suppose it's a closet.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That isn't a commentary on the housing problem, huh? A woman moving into a house without even knowing where all the closets are. Take the pictures down, will you, honey? Bring them in here.
Okay.
I guess you'll have to help me with this door. I can't get it open.
Let me see it. Well, of course you can, silly. It's locked. Where are those keys we found on the desk?
Here they are.
Nope. Not this one. Sure, this one won't work. Nope. Feels like an awful solid door for a closet.
Oh, and that's one solid door in the house.
Nope, this one won't do it either. Well, we'll just have to get a locksmith up here on Monday. I'll put the pictures behind the desk, okay?
Yeah, all right. Jim, if you could just help me move this armchair, huh?
Oh, Ellen, will you let it go until tomorrow? You know what time it is?
Oh, but honey, I'd like to get the place looking just a little bit.
Yeah, but it's almost midnight. In fact, it's exactly...
What was that?
Tomcat, I guess, out in the brush somewhere.
Sounded near. Hope that doesn't go on all night.
Well, there's much we can do about it. Come on, Ellen. I'm dead tired.
All right, Jim. All right.
Where'd you put the toothpaste, honey?
It's right in the medicine cabinet.
Oh, yeah.
Jim, we ought to get some firewood tomorrow. You know, a fire in that living room would make all the difference in the world.
Can't. Sunday.
Well, Monday then. Jim, I think red curtains are what we need, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Mm.
You know, just at least for the living room. Anyway, the ones in there now have just got to come down.
Yeah, I suppose they do.
What do you think of red?
Well, I guess it's all...
Jim.
It's some tomcat.
Jim, it sounded in the house.
Oh, now, how could it be in the house, Ellen? We've been over every inch of the house.
Except... that closet.
Now, how could a cat or anything else be in the closet that's been locked up for over a year?
Oh, I don't know.
It's probably under the house. A wildcat or mountain lion or something. I hear they have them in California.
Jim, I don't like
it. Well, neither do I like it, but there's nothing we can do about it tonight.
Oh, maybe we ought to call somebody, the police or some neighbor.
Oh, don't be silly, Ellen. You act like a kid. Come on, let's go to bed, huh?
Well, all right. I suppose it is silly. Jimmy, did you lock the door?
Yeah. Can I turn out the lights now?
Yeah. All right.
Good night, Ellen. Sleep tight.
Good night, Jim.
I don't know what time it was. Perhaps an hour, perhaps only a half hour later. My mind was in that hazy borderland between sleep and a dream that's still part of consciousness. Then I was awake. Ellen, are you all right?
Yes.
Nightmare or something?
No. I heard it, too.
Well, that didn't sound like any cat.
Put on the light.
Yeah.
It seemed to be out there, Jim, in the house somewhere.
Well, I'm going to look into this.
Jim, you be careful.
Come on. Where's my shotgun?
In the den, I think. Jim.
What?
There's something wet.
What? Wet?
Running from under the closet door. Dickie.
Ellen, don't. Don't touch it.
I had to. Jim, it's blood.
For Suspense, Roma Wines are bringing you Robert Taylor in the house in Cypress Canyon. Roma Wine's presentation tonight in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. Between the acts of Suspense, this is Ken Niles for Roma Wine. These days before Christmas are busy ones indeed, yet smart hostesses everywhere find time for shopping and distinguished home entertaining later. The secret? Magnificent Grand Estate Wine. Presented by Roma, America's greatest vintner, Grand Estate Wines add distinction to your hospitality on a moment's notice. Make your holiday welcome, effortless, and in perfect taste. The brilliant clarity, full fragrance, and mellow taste of Grand Estate Wines please discriminating people everywhere. For Grand Estate Wines, limited bottlings by Roma, are born of choicest grapes, then patiently guided to superb taste richness by Roma vintner skill, necessary time, and America's finest winemaking resources. Delight your guests with Grand Estate California wine for entertaining, medium sherry, ruby port, or golden muscatel. For dining, burgundy or sauterne. So insist on Grand Estate wines and enjoy the crowning achievement of vintner skill. And now, Roma Wines bring back to our Hollywood soundstage Robert Taylor as James A. Woods, with Kathy Lewis as his wife Ellen, in the house in Cypress Canyon. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
It cannot be too difficult to understand from the foregoing why I've taken the pains to set down in writing the events related here. To find in one's newly rented house a closet which cannot be opened is in itself certainly no great cause for alarm. But to be awakened in the stillness of the night by unearthly cries within that house, to find oozing from under that closet door something that is unquestionably blood. That's another matter. Perhaps others might have been braver than we. Suffice it only to say that we got out of the house in something very close to a panic, and only returned when we had the moral support of two stalwart Los Angeles policemen.
You just moved in here, you say?
That's right, officer. You can see we're still unpacking.
And the place has been empty right along before that?
Yeah, I don't know much about that part of it. You could check all that with the real estate agent, though.
Well, where is this closet?
Oh, it's right in here, officer. And the blood is...
Where? Where's the blood?
Jim?
Officer, I swear to you, there was blood on the floor less than an hour ago. I saw it.
Uh-huh.
It was running out from under that door. We heard that noise, and we got up, and then we saw it. The door was locked.
Locked, huh?
Be all right now. Hey, you folks aren't trying to be funny, are you?
Isn't there anything in it?
No, ma'am, there is not.
Look, officer, we're reputable people. You can call my firm. They'll tell you all about me.
There's nothing wrong with this closet. Walls are solid. No trap doors.
If you think I'm lying...
I didn't say that, mister. Oh, you probably did hear some sort of noise and you got a little panicky.
What about the blood? It got on my hand.
Isn't there now, is it?
Yes.
Where?
I feel it.
Now, you folks just take it easy. You're liable to hear all kinds of noises up in these canyons at night. You're from the east, you say?
Yeah. I'm sorry, officer.
Ah, that's all right. That's all right. If you have any real trouble, call on us anytime.
All right.
Well, good night.
Good night.
Good night. Hey. You ought to have this door fixed. That's enough to scare you.
Yeah, we're going to have it fixed. We didn't say much about it after that. There wasn't much that could be said. The next day, I went down to a lot and bought a little Christmas tree and some trimmings, and we tried to pretend we were cheerful, but there was an uneasiness between us that had never been there before. Ellen seemed tired and listless. Several times during the day, I noticed her washing her hands with a brush, scrubbing the one that had touched the blood. That night, we each took a sleeping pill and went to bed. It was sometime after midnight when I was suddenly wide awake and staring into the darkness. In some way, I knew at once and instinctively what had awakened me. Ellen was not in her bed nor in the room. The nameless thing I feared gripped at my heart until I could scarcely breathe. I opened the bedroom door and started through the house, putting on every light that I could find. There was not much to search, but I searched thoroughly. The living room, the kitchen, bathroom, day, and even the garage. And all the time, the dread of looking where I knew at last I must look. For I think I knew from the very first time where I'd find her. It must have been a full minute that I stood before that closet door. Then I opened it. She stood there rigid, her arms at her sides, her fingers extended like claws. Her hair was over her face, her eyes stared out of it. Her lips were drawn back in a grin like an animal at bay. For a moment I was frozen with the horror of it. I stretched out my hand. Very deliberately, she turned her head and sunk her teeth until they met into the flesh of my forearm. I'd raised my hand to strike at her, but already she'd relaxed her hold and gone utterly limp. She would have fallen unless I'd caught her. I carried her into the bedroom and laid her on the bed. Strangely, at that moment, my only thought was how I might revive her. Until I saw that it was not a faint, but a sleep that she'd fallen into. Sleep as deep and heavy as though she'd been drugged. And so I left her. But for me, that night, there was no sleep.
Jim?
Yes, Ellen?
Oh. What are you doing up so early?
Oh, I got a little restless, went out to make some coffee.
Oh. Oh, I had the most wonderful sleep. And I feel so rested.
Do you?
Mm-hmm. Jim.
What?
What's the matter with your arm?
Oh, I just heard it.
Well, honey, it's terribly swollen. Let me see it.
No, it's all right, Ellen.
Oh, it isn't all right. You've got to see Dr. Wesley right away.
Sure, I will.
No,
I will.
You promised me, Jim, that you'll go the first thing this morning. How'd it happen?
Why, there was a dog.
Dog?
Yeah, I heard him trying to chew through the screen door. I went out to chase him away, and he bit me.
Was all that racket, and I didn't even wake up?
No, Ellen, you didn't even wake up. It was clear to me that Ellen knew nothing of what had transpired the night before. I went to my office that morning and made a pretense of going over routine business, if only to restore my mind to some semblance of calm by the sight and sound of common, familiar things. Pain in my arm had become a persistent, dull throbbing. I made a late appointment with Dr. Wesley. He treated my arm with something of an arched eyebrow, and he said,
"Well, I've never seen anything quite like it before. That is, such a rapid onset of infection."
It was dark when I left his office. I hadn't realized it was so late. Driving home, my car seemed sluggish until I saw the needle on the dashboard and realized that I was pushing it to the utmost of its speed. I was racing home to prevent something before it was too late, before the darkness had conspired against me. For somehow I already knew with certainty that it was the darkness and the night that I had to fear. The curves of the canyon seemed endless. And then the cold fear leaped up inside me. My house, too, was dark. I went slowly up the stone steps in the road, looking, praying for some sign of light or light. There was none. The house was empty. Ellen was gone. I looked with the same self-torturing thoroughness, and in that closet first of all, knowing as I did so that it was hopeless. And so, alone in that empty house, I waited, powerless and helpless now, deadened in thought and will, empty as the house itself, save only for the overwhelming sense of a terrible foreboding. For some time in the early hours of the morning, I snapped on the radio, shortwave. Why? Surely a minor question now. I only know that I did. And then I heard it.
Car 58, car 58, go to Laurel Canyon, the 4000 block. A report that a man has been injured or attacked. Condition thought to be critical. Ambulance will follow. That is all.
I was there almost before the police, edging my way through the little crowd, staring down at the man lying there in his white uniform under the streetlight.
Yeah, the milkman, poor guy.
I heard him scream, but when I got here, just like this.
Stand back. Please stand back.
Well, you again.
I heard it on the radio. I live just down the road.
Yeah, I remember.
What happened?
Well, take a look. Maybe you can tell us.
Yeah. He was dead. And he was lying on his back. And his throat had been torn out as though by the fangs of some wild animal. It is now Christmas Eve, or rather Christmas morning, for it's a little after midnight. I've been waiting here in the stillness of this empty house for nearly 24 hours, waiting for the end. Already once tonight, I've heard that dreadful, wailing cry somewhere in the hills. I've nailed up the closet door, but that I know is childish, useless. My arm is horribly swollen and turning black, but that's nothing. It's another end that I foresee, as surely as other men foresee the rising of the sun. I hear the cry again. It's nearer now. I shall leave these notes in a sealed envelope and put it in a shoebox, in the hope that someone will give credence to these dark and terrible events, if indeed such nameless horrors can ever yield to mortal understanding. As for myself, I feel no longer any fear or even sorrow, only a desire that the end and the thing that I must do may come soon. And it will be soon, I know. Yes. Someone at the door. what of it?
That's what I thought. Now, listen, that's not quite all of it. Huh? Clip to it's a newspaper clip. Listen. Hollywood, December the 26th. Police reported what was apparently a case of murder and suicide in Cypress Canyon sometime in the early hours of the morning. The victims were James A. Woods, a chemical engineer, and his wife, Ellen. Preliminary investigation indicates that Mrs. Woods was killed by the blast of a shotgun in the hands of her husband, who then turned the weapon upon himself. That she fought desperately for her life, however, was evidenced by the disorder of the room and the severe lacerations inflicted upon her husband about the neck and arms. This is the second tragedy to be reported in Cypress Canyon within 24 hours, the other being the unexplained death of Frank Polanski, a milkman.
Well, no such murders or whatever they were ever occurred, if that's what's worrying you. The clipping, well, you have those things printed up, you know.
No, it's not that, Sam. That story was found in an unfinished house in Cypress Canyon. No number, no nothing, just a framework.
Uh-huh.
Now that house is finished. When I drove by it today... But that's what stopped me, Sam, because it all fits. Now that it's finished, it is the house in the story, the same construction, the same vines and creepers on the lawn, even the same number.
So what? A guy who knows roughly what this house is going to be like writes a yarn and loses it or something.
Did he know the place was going to be listed for rental today, the Saturday before Christmas?
Oh, Jerry, coincidence. Two bits you find the guy next door is a ghost story writer or something, and he's been wondering for a year what happened to that thing he wrote.
Okay. Okay, coincidence. Well, I'm sorry I bothered you.
Don't be silly. I liked it. It's a good yarn. That the Corinth sign you were talking about?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to put it up outside now.
Uh-huh. Well, so long, Jerry, and Merry Christmas again.
Yeah, well, thanks, Sam. I guess I was kind of silly, all right, huh?
Listen, when a guy named, whatever it is, Woods, with a wife named Ellen, comes in to rent that place from you... Then you can start worrying.
Yeah. Well, so long, Sam.
So long, Jerry.
Come in.
Oh, we're sorry to bother you, but we just happened to see that for rent sign outside.
Well, yeah, I hung it out just this minute.
Is the house available?
Oh, sure it is. Well,
let me introduce myself. My name is James A. Woods, and this is my wife, Ellen.
How do? Wow. Looks like it's fixing to...
Yes, it does, doesn't it?
Presented by Roma Wines, R-O-M-A, Roma Wines, selected for your pleasure from the world's greatest reserves of fine wines. Tonight's show marks the third birthday of Suspense on the Air, and this is Ken Niles asking our star of the evening, Robert Taylor, to help us celebrate.
Why didn't you tell me before, Ken? If I'd only known, I'd have baked a cake.
Well, Bob, all Suspense parties are surprise parties. As an old hand on Suspense, you know that in our plays, the tables are usually turned on the star. So tonight, although it's our birthday, we're going to give you a present. Here it is, a gift basket of Grand Estate California wines from Roma, America's greatest vintner, to our distinguished anniversary guest, Robert Taylor.
Thanks, Ken. You turn a nice table.
And you can set a nice table with Grand Estate Burgundy in your basket, Bob. For Grand Estate Burgundy means rare dining pleasure. Add memorable distinction to holiday dinner. Even everyday meals are outstanding in taste when Grand Estate Burgundy is served. Yes, all Grand Estate wines presented by Roma are limited bottlings of outstanding taste excellence.
Well, that I know about Grand Estate wines, Ken.
But did you know that for Grand Estate wines, Roma selects only the choicest grapes? Then the ancient skill of Roma master vintners, necessary time, and America's finest winemaking resources guide the cuvee of this grape treasure to rich taste luxury. That's why discriminating wine users everywhere look to Grand Estate wines as the crowning achievement of vintner skill.
Reason enough. And now, Ken, who's all set to star on Suspense next Thursday?
It's that very wonderful actress and wonderful girl, Miss Susan Peters.
Susan will appear as a young lady in straitened circumstances who finds herself mistaken for a very rich young lady and who is forced into continuing the deception with murder as a result.
I'll certainly make it a point to listen. And before I go, I'd like to thank this really great company of actors who have played with me tonight, and particularly Kathy Lewis, who played Ellen.
Thank you, Bob.
Tonight's original suspense play was written by Robert L. Richards. Next Thursday, same time, you will hear Miss Susan Peters as star of Suspense.
Produced by William Spear for the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
You know, when it comes to horror, there's really no place like home. Come to think of it, there's a few places I haven't explored in my house either. How about you? Then again, perhaps it's better that way. I'm Dr. Morgan. Join me next week, if you can.
No.